welcome to the Dad's Grip podcast. My name is Blair. I'm one of the co-hosts here. And in this space, we are simply just trying to build each other up. You know, we are investing in each other. We bring in experts, regular dads, anyone that we feel that has just some sort of insight and wisdom to help us, to equip us to become better dads and better partners and be able to just, yeah, again, support our families, supporting fathers, supporting families. That's what we aim to do here. We've had such an incredible season. We've had Steve Bidoff, we've had Maggie Dent, we've had Dr. Matt Sanders come and join us, and just so many more quality episodes. And so check them out if you haven't already. We're going to come up to the end of our season two at the end of November. So the last week of November is going to be our last week, which is a bit sad, you know, but we need a break. We need a break coming up to Christmas. And yeah, it's going to be exciting. And we're just really pumped. So give us some time to get season three planned out and thought out and just recorded. And we're just extremely excited for that as well. So make sure you follow along for that. If you could please help us out, it goes an extremely long way, guys, to subscribe, like, share, and just get all involved with that. That'd be absolutely amazing, because that, again, really, really helps us out to spread this support out to other families around Australia and around the world. So please get onto that. That'd be amazing. On today's episode, though, I'm really keen for this. We are joined by the one and only Steve Willis. You also might know him as Commando Steve, a well-known Australian fitness trainer, television personality, author, and a former commando in the Australian Special Forces. Steve is an incredible motivational coach in leadership, fitness, and personal development. And we're honored to have him share his wisdom on this podcast this week. Steve touches on the damage that comparison can do to your parenting journey and shares encouragement that we are not trapped in our old parenting habits or the patterns of our parents. That's a good one. But that we can change and learn as parents as we grow into our roles. We hope you're encouraged by this episode. Bernsey did an amazing job. But yeah, I hope you guys are encouraged by it. Catch you guys next week.
Well, welcome to the Dad's Group podcast, Steve. Thank you for joining us.
It's a pleasure, Adam. Great to be chatting to you and to all the dads and the listeners out there. It's great to be a part of it. And hopefully I can share some insight, some wisdom, some knowledge, maybe learn something myself.
Look, I always like to check in with our guests. And so I want to ask you, Steve, how are you going out of 10 today?
Mate, really good. 10.
Awesome.
10s every day. Well, I guess it's a bit of a loaded question, isn't it, sometimes?
That's it. What helps you get to that 10 and stay at that 10?
Oh, just the enjoyment of life. It is. You know, it's everything that you've done. It's the ups and downs. It's the ins and outs. It's the interactions. I think you're realizing that, I can get pretty deep straight away, put your bell helmet on, team, and hook up to some air. Yep. You're going scuba Steve. A lot of what we do is an illusion.
Yeah.
It's not real. And we manufacture these things to create some sense of self and identity and structure it's psychology to help ourselves feel safe and secure and the like. But in that too, because it's a story, a lot of those things, we take it so seriously.
Yeah.
So when you can step back from things and create a bit of space within yourself, and it's like a doorway or a veil, and you can see it to a degree for what it is, you realize it's a game.
Yep.
And it's like, hang on a second, how do I play this game? So understanding the rules of the game, like you would watching sport or anything like that, you go, this is what I need to do. And when you do those things, it makes playing the game a little easier, but you can also step away from the game.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess within that too, like, because it's an illusion and because it's playing the game, you can give and take what is helpful or not helpful, hey?
Yeah, and exactly. And, you know, we all get so attached to things and, You know, it's not to say that I've been thinking and doing this way ever since I was little. Like, it's taken a lifetime to have these realizations. But, you know, it's through reading and it's, you know, trial and error and hearing other people explain things and it not meaning anything for a period of time. And then, whammo, it lands with you. And it's like, oh, those words I heard 5 years ago, they're resonating and they have some significance and meaning now. Mm. And yeah, that give and take just takes the pressure off, you know, the stress, the anxiety, the things that are ever so present nowadays. And we tend to talk so much about, you see it in the media and social media and a lot of those spaces, but you got to remember, you got to live life, and that's, yeah. And how you interact with yourself and those that are closest to you, they're the moments that are the most precious. And are you constantly agitated with yourself? Are you upset? Do you trigger easily with things? Do your kids trigger you? Does your wife trigger you or your partner? Or just the interactions in what it is that you do, and being able to step back from that and just going, oh yeah, go, here we go. And having a bit of a smile about it and just letting go somewhat, enables you to just coast or float or observe.
Mm.
You know, sometimes a lot of things just don't need your interaction. You just let them be. And we're always trying to solve things for people and have solutions and the like. And remember, people are here too to figure things out for themselves, and they're going to make mistakes as much as we do.
Yeah.
And realizing that's the kind of person that I am. I'm, you know, I would say I've very much grown up, you know, from my childhood being a people pleaser,
yeah.
And really going to the effort and the degree, both physically and mentally, to help, to be of service, to provide. You know, these are things that males naturally do as well, but to what degree?
Yes, yes.
And to be able to step back from that and just, you know, say for your kids, watch them just stuff things up. You know, how easy is it to take their Lego and finish it for them?
Yeah.
You know, hang on a second. Hang on, what have I just done?
Yeah.
You know, like, what did they learn from putting that Lego together? And I've completed it just for the sake of what? Because now we've got this, it looks, we've got in our hands what's on the cover of that Lego packet. Mm. But we've done it like that. We've missed all these other experiences and maybe our kids. I think of my son, you know, figuring things out, and he's like, Dad, he's so frustrated sitting on the floor. He's like, I can't figure this out. And you go back and you look through the book and you go, here's where we messed up. We stuck that brick on top of this one, and instead of it going underneath,
yeah.
and then it's a little more smooth sailing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Where I sort of want to go with this is, we're talking about identity, and we're talking about, you use that phrase, people pleasing, which, you know, when you become a dad, and a lot of our listeners are new or expecting dads, and when you become a dad, it's such a shift in identity of, you know, maybe prior to having a kid, you and your partner, you could still sort of play a bit of the playful bachelor, you know, you could still sort of go off and have your boys' time, but then you have this kid and all of the responsibilities and all of the, oh crap, like I'm actually like the guide and the protector of like this little being's future and life and who they become. And so it's this huge identity shift. And I sort of like what we're saying here about, you know, there's all this information that gets chucked at you when you become a parent. And for dads now, there's so much of it tailored to dads now as well, which is on the one hand, it's really great because we're talking to dads about that role and dads are responding. But then on the other hand, it's how do you sift through all of that and go, what's helpful, what's not helpful? And how do I find a way in all of this that I'm not, as you say, like just people pleasing and just doing what everyone says, because then I'm going to be a good dad. And I think you breaking it back down to that example of your son and the Lego is such a great image for us to go, hey, like, don't just you, like find the flow of it. find the flow of it, and how do we have that give and take, that reciprocity with our kids and with our partners and in that family construct?
Yeah, don't lose sight of what it was to be a kid yourself.
Yeah.
Like, remind yourself. Like, my children remind me all the time of myself at different stages in life, and especially when I was young. And and what I was saying earlier about, you know, taking things too seriously, like, play. Like, have fun. Be curious. Investigate. Like, you know, be willing to make mistakes alongside your kids, and there's an opportunity to figure those things out together. You don't have to be the one that's always right. Like, you know, your kids are always going to look. I remember being a kid looking up to my parents, even if they were making mistakes, thinking that they were perfect anyway. You know, like that, they're just, you always just held them in that, at that level. Like, you, they were that, they were those role models in that sense. And then as you go into adulthood and the like, you realize, oh, damn, Mum and Dad made a lot of mistakes, and, you know, there's a lot of things that I'm not too happy about. But at the same time, they were doing the best they could relative to the space they were in.
Yeah.
And we are in this era of humanity privy to so much more information and knowledge, as you were saying, which, like a menu at a restaurant, can actually create a lot of, how would you say, not stagnation as such, but apprehension, like anxieties around, like, which direction do I move in? It's like making a choice. Yeah, I go to a restaurant and there's five things on the menu. Boom, you can choose. Mm. And if there's too much complexity, I'm like, to the missus, you choose. You know, because I just don't want that headache. I can't decide. Yeah. But this is something that I've also learned in my life, is complexity is the enemy of execution.
Complexity is the enemy of execution. I like that.
And we get taught from an early childhood that anything of significance and importance and is found in output, and we have to do things that are more and more complex. So then we build this behavior that the solution must be in something more complex than where we're at right now.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time it's not. It's back to what I just said before. Remember what it's like to be a kid. Mm-hmm. Remind yourself of the things that you enjoyed doing and what you maybe wish your parents would have done with you, and do those things with your kids. And they're simple. They're like taking them for a walk. Let's get them out on a bike ride, put the dog on the leash and just go for a stroll as the sun sets, whatever it might be. You know, they may buck the system and rather sit and watch TV or the iPad, but that's the initial friction point. Once you get them out into the fresh air and into a park and all that, all of a sudden they come to life in those spaces, and it's like, wow, this is – and that's as simple as packing the car and going on a picnic.
That's it. That's it.
You know, like it's like complexity is the enemy of execution, and sometimes we think of the simple things and we go, oh, that can't be the solution, and a lot of the time it is. And then you figure things out and you can add more, you know, and everything else is the icing and the cherry on top.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be a $150, you know, trip to some trampoline park just because the kids say that that's what they want to do. You know, we can spend our life savings in a week, you know, if we did everything that a kid wanted to do. You know, it's so true. But we feel compelled to do those things. And I heard you say it before, because, you know, that people pleasing or almost keeping up with the Joneses, such and such is doing five sports a week. And, you know, every afternoon after school, they've got a different thing. You've got to remember too, that, that a lot of what bogs us as adults down is doing things that always have an outcome. Or, you know, we could use different words like an aim or like a purpose or the like, and just doing things without something, without the idea of something in return is important too, because it helps us to create a bit more space. There isn't so much structure, and we can, we're more curious and flexible. We're not so rigid in doing. Like, it's got to be done this way. And then we expect our children to, like, they don't give a damn. It's like one of the boys comes home from school and he's learning piano. The last thing he wants to do is when he gets home from school of 6 hours is sit in front of the piano. Mm-hmm. He wants a bit of space and time in between. He carries on like an idiot. He's floating around the house with his head in the clouds. Like, you know, you're trying to pin him down and all of a sudden there's these frustrations, as I said before, you're being triggered. But why? He's a kid. He just wants to let loose and be free of the constraints of what's expected of him at school. And then you get him an hour or two later and, all right, it's time to be, okay, boom, he'll do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you'll fight for an hour trying to get him to do it straight after school.
Yeah.
You got to learn to, you know, to where to have the wins with things. And that's also very important, but it's all exciting.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I like the word flexibility, and I think it's an understated part of that empathy work that we do with our kids of trying to understand where they're coming from. And yeah, I think there's a flexibility of having to shift or warp our expectations or warp what we think is the way that things need to happen to actually give our kids that space to be or to feel what they need to feel in that moment. And I think, I don't know, for you know, this generation of dads, that might not have been something necessarily we were modeled from our own dads of, you know, that flexibility. But I wonder, like, what does that, where does that come from for you? Because, you know, we know you as Commando Steve. I can see your military insignia behind you. Like, that seems like a really straight, rigid, you know, sort of framework. So where does flexibility come from in your parenting style?
Oh, my parenting style, just the type of person I think, you know, intrinsically that I am. It's a part of my constitution. Like, I'm just a curious cat. Like, I don't take. I struggled in school to. I probably had a bit of a an issue with authority, and although I had probably the strictest father in the world growing up, or stepdad. But I always questioned everything, everything. And that curious nature and that willingness to investigate and try things for myself, and not just comprehension, like, I get that. It's like, take that comprehension and put it into practice. Now, is it working for me? Is it working, you know, in the environment that I am, the people that I'm around? And if it is, great. And you gain a deeper understanding beyond comprehension, you know, those skill sets. And if not, well, then it's about adjusting. And there's the flexibility. Yeah. It's, and these are things that I was also taught in the military. As rigid as you may think the military is, you know, the role in which I was in required a certain level of intellect because, how do I relate this? You know, most guys like motorsport or, you know, watching other kind of combative sports. The thing with sport like that, whether it's race cars, motorcycles, or football and the like, time condenses. So much more happens in shorter spaces of time. So you got to be switched on. Yeah, and as we said before with our kids, allowing space and for things to kind of unfold in its due course or nature is great. But to play the game of the sport or motorsport or what have you, or in the military, you know, with the special forces, and that time is condensed, you've got to be so aware and you've got to make quick decisions and you've got to have reactions, reflexes, you know, the skill sets to be able to comprehend and handle those situations. And that's where a lot of it for me was. You know, you would put a plan in place, you would prepare, you would execute, that plan would get absolutely blown to bits. You know, it made sense on paper. In reality, it was nonsense. And you would do a post-activity report. All right, these are things that worked really well. Here's some crappy areas we need to improve on. You'd come up with another plan and go about and you'd execute. And we would do that day in, day out. And that's in training. Hmm. You know, I left the army in 2004. A lot of my mates went on to serve in Afghanistan, you know, some of them doing 10 tours plus. And, you know, some of them never coming home, and others, you know, that's another story. But yeah. They then got to put a lot of these plans that we thought in training were like Mickey Mouse, and it was nonsense again in the real thing. And so they got firsthand experience, you know, with an enemy and rounds coming down range, like what works and doesn't work. Mm. And then the implementation, it goes back into the training. And it's again, and there's, if you look at the nucleus of a family in a more intimate sense, it's all there too. Mm. You know, there's the husband, the wife, you know, or you bring a child into the world and all right, you're going to make mistakes, you know, have a bit of a plan, you prepare for it, you execute, oh, shit, that didn't go so well. And you're kind of back to the drawing board. But it's, I think a lot of it is in how you then perceive yourself and the other or those that are involved and your interactions. And again, as we're saying, allowing people to be themselves is beautiful. And how you engage with them, with that, with behaviors, with, because, you know, we all didn't grow up together. We all have come from different families and, you know, things that are, that we value more than others and the like. And it's such a melting pot. And, but at the same time, trying to compromise, to collaborate and the like is, it's difficult, but at the same time, so worth the focus and the attention.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It strikes me in that example, particularly in the training exercises and going back and reiterating and, you know, sort of coming up with that new plan or the revision of it, that there's a certain level of humility or like not taking yourself too seriously in those exercises, in that if it's your mistake, you can't then obsess over that mistake. If it's your stuff up or if it's, you know, if it's on you to shift and change, you've got to be able to let go of what you did to accept the new.
And, that's exactly right, yeah.
And I think, you know, I sort of see that in my family especially of like, crap, I've got to take the bins out, like, I can't stay in that moment because otherwise I miss the next one and the next one. So I guess it is that humility or that almost, not taking yourself too seriously. And again, as you said, like it's having a bit of a sense of humor about this.
And that's, it's, well, I don't know. It seems to have shifted a little bit, but Aussies are renowned for it too. Yeah. And I know even to this day in the military, there's, and you see it in very much in male centric roles.
Yes.
We're just big kids, like, especially in industries where it's quite physical, like they're always playing practical jokes on one another. Everyone's got a nickname, like there's, You make light of your situation of crappy situations and difficult situations. And it's like even again back to the role that I was fulfilling or playing in the military. You know, we did a lot of really dangerous stuff, like but really exciting and fun at the same time. and you would make light of it. And to an outsider, their tolerance levels maybe or what they deem as safe and the like, you know, again, through their upbringing and experience is one thing. To us, being so intimate with it and living on the edge with it and kind of crossing those lines from time to time, it just is. Mm. And I found that's kind of not caught me out, but it's in life outside of the military and how, say, in parenting, in just my interaction, say, on The Biggest Loser and the like when I did it, what people would be freaking out about, I'd be like, what's the matter? This is just everyday run-of-the-mill type stuff. And then you're almost considered callous or not, because you didn't get caught up in the drama.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is, it's just back to the story. It's like, oh my God, because, and a lot of the time that kind of fluffing of the feathers and that whole like squawking and squeaking and carrying on is because people are uncomfortable. They're just, they're unsure of how to deal with the situation.
For sure. I wonder if we could rewind back to, you talked about the role of your stepfather, and then you talked about, you know, your own family and bringing together all of those different experiences of family, of, you know, families of origin, and all the beliefs and all the stuff that sort of falls out from that. I wonder, could you talk to, you know, as you entered into fatherhood and family, what were some of those pervasive things from your own family that were helpful, but then some that weren't helpful? And then within your role of and you have a mixed family, of like, how do you balance all of that and how do you navigate that together?
Yeah, so growing up for me, I guess with my stepdad, the one, he struggled as a guy, as a man, from, I guess, his experiences and things that he was engaged with and caught up with. And then when he met my mum, I was like 5, and I was like, who's this bloke? He's not my dad. And I didn't really take to him. And I think I was this young, hyperactive kid that didn't really know how to express himself. And you know, a lot of boys didn't, and to this day still don't. Females are much better at it.
Yeah.
And the way in which we express ourselves is physically. And that's what I did. A lot of, you know, my discomfort, my anger, my upset, my frustration, my uncertainty, I express physically, whether it was out on a push fight, going for a run, you know, creating havoc around the house and upsetting my mother and my father. It could have been a number of different things.
Yeah.
But he was very hard on us and very disciplined. And I think a lot of that was, he didn't want us to turn out the way that he did as such. And he felt that using discipline in the manner in which he did and the constraints that he put on, there was myself and 3 brothers, so it was 4 of us in total, would keep us on the straight and narrow. But a lot of that too, we lacked a lot of social interaction and just being teenagers and mixing with our mates and even, you know, just, you know, in those social settings outside of, say, school, because I wasn't really allowed to do anything outside of school. I went to school, I came home from school, you know, we had cousins and, a few others that we may interact with, but outside of that, he couldn't have cared less about interacting with other human beings. So I went into life and I joined the military pretty much straight out of school. And again, very much a disciplined environment. And, you know, you draw the line and here's the do's and don'ts and here's the expectation and the standards that you've got to uphold to fulfill these roles. And I was in 2 commando at the time. So I was 22 when my daughter was born. I remember I was doing a lot of courses at the time. And how I perceived life at that stage was, very serious. And I had this role to fulfill. And I was, she was young and the like, but how I saw my role as a father was very much how I was fathered.
Yeah.
And then as she grew up, and I remember interactions or moments in time where I would never father my children at this point in time, how I did back then. And a lot of that was, you know, I was triggered quite quickly. I was angered quite quickly about things, which was very much my stepfather.
Yeah.
And, you know, having those realizations and recognizing that I didn't need to father and be the man or the spit of, as such, my stepfather, wasn't until I was probably in my early 30s.
Yeah.
And I was like, hang on a second, you know, how how he interacted with life and the things that he did or didn't do and the things that he would allow us as kids to do or not to do, I don't really agree with a lot of those things. And I actually have a choice here in how or in the decisions that I make, you know, for myself, but also for my kids and the things that I'll let slide to the things that I'll pull them up on. Rather than pulling them up on everything, trying to turn children into like adults all of a sudden. Because I remember once saying to him when I was a kid, "I just want to be big and tough like you." I remember him saying once, "You don't want to grow up, so you don't want to be like that too young. You grow up so quickly." But I guess his energy and his the way in which he. The philosophies, I guess, he held and the ways in which he thought and what it meant to be a man, I was adopting those. And we all do, whether we're consciously adopting it and those behaviours and those ways of being and, as you said before, modelling things. Whether we are or we're not, and I think the sooner in life that we realize those differences or there's the awareness around behaviors and habits, the sooner the opportunity to make a choice of either following that through or making a change.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of even this interaction now and the information era as such and technology is so much more on offer and different courses of action and philosophies and just ways of interacting and being that we can kind of pick and choose. But again, where a lot of it falls short is the execution. It's actually implementing it. Yeah. You know, you can listen to podcasts until you go deaf.
Yeah.
And still nothing changes. Just because you listen to something doesn't mean that it's going to take effect. You've got to put the hard work in. You've got to pull your sleeves up. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you might not see the ripening of the fruit, you know, the effects of that change in that given moment. It might take a few days, weeks, months, years, but there's the process, and it's what you learn from being in the process and the implementation of the process and the consistency is what you become. It's, you know, that destination that we're so desperately, you know, like the Lego, we just want it finished. And then when it's finished, it's all, what do we do now? You know, we've got to go buy another Lego, you know, thing. and then it's like, there's all this Lego around the house. What do we do with it now? It just looks good. It just sits on a shelf, you know? Do we pull it apart and put it back together? Yeah. Hands up. Let's do a poll. Who pulls the Lego apart and puts it back together? No one. How many times do you read the same book, you know? But that's, you know, see, we have a laugh about things and it's... Yeah. To see the silliness in things, to even see those differences in your behavior and how you did father to how you now father and the like forgive yourself, as you know, you said it beautifully before, let go, you know, draw a line, the acceptance of, all right, this was, but this is now, and rather than what was. Seeing now through the lens of the past.
Yeah.
And, you know, that ability to let go, it helps us settle into the now. And then we're not so desperately grasping at the future to be our saving grace. Mm. You know, it's the now is beautiful. Like we're all beautiful. We're all, you know, I know there's a lot of struggle in the world. There's a lot of pain, suffering, and fear. But taking ownership of your own and not allowing it to be the thing that bogs you down and working your way through it, you know, going into it rather than, well, what's that? I used to do it with my kids walking down the street. We're going on a bear hunt. I'm not scared, you know, like, so yeah. A lot of us, you know, as men, we're trying to, you know, pop up the chest. We're trying to like, you know, put on this brave face. And the majority of the time, we just want our little teddy bear under our arm as well. We're just as scared.
Yeah.
And when we can kind of accept some of those realizations and all right, you know, work through it with your kids and have those conversations. It's amazing. Like, oh, my oldest boy is 12, you know, and I'll lay on the bed and I'll give him a hug or give him a, you know, a kiss on the cheek or the forehead. He'll do the same back. I don't remember any of those interactions with my dad. You know, just like I couldn't give a stuff about the television. Honest to God, mate, I just don't care. And it's not that I don't like watching it. It just is not on my radar.
Mm.
Mate, there is so many more things in life that need my energy and time, and I would rather be investing it into. And, you know, I'm going on 48, so I'm a little bit older in the sense of my body doesn't perform as well as it did in my 20s and 30s. I can't just switch it on. Like, if I got up from this seat and walked around now, everyone would be like, are you injured? Is there something wrong with you? No, I've pushed myself hard. Mm-hmm. But you know what? Every step that I take where there's that discomfort, I think to myself, you know what? Yeah, you put yourself through the ringer. But I do things to help, you know, look after it and the like, and the way in which I live life. But it's like anything, you know. Unfortunately, things wear out. And but to be, again, okay with that. And the beauty of that is I'm still agile and mobile and healthy and the like, and can do majority of things and have those interactions with my kids. And that's wonderful. Like, you know, like and modeling of nothing is beneath me and nothing's above. Like, if something needs to be done as a dad, I will do it. Sometimes I'm not in the mood and it might be begrudgingly, or you'll hear me whinge about it, but I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
And I try to impart that into my kids as well. It's, because we all have enough, but we still want.
Yeah.
We all want. And there's those conversations I have with my kids, because we want to go do this. We want to go do that. That's like, mate, we've just had breakfast. There's all these dishes. I've cooked you all breakfast, blah, blah, blah. Now the dishes need to be done. Like, they're not going to do themselves. So I need you guys to help. The sooner we as a team get things done, the sooner we can do the things that you deem are more fun.
Yeah.
But there's beauty in, you know, having a clean kitchen, taking things back to a baseline.
Mm.
Because it's that baseline that is our foundation, but it's a springboard at the same time. And if that baseline is constantly cluttered, well, then how do you wade through everything when you need, how do I say this? When you've got to go back to it as such, you know what I mean? Like, I think of a kitchen and a messy kitchen, and you've had breakfast and it's like, all right, let's go. And then you come back and the elves haven't washed all the dishes. And then that's got to be dealt with. And then the next meal's got to be prepared. You know what I mean? But people live like that. It's a constant planning and preparation.
Yeah.
It's planning and preparation. And yeah, the more responsibilities you have, the more things that you shackle yourself to, the more kids you have, the more responsibilities and things you're accountable for. And as a man, when you have those realizations, you got to pony up. Like, that's damn on your shoulders, buddy.
Yeah.
And, you know, we can start drawing the line at, we talk, you know, it can be a little bit more serious about those things, because no one else is, you know, gonna, I nearly said like a knight in shining armor, gonna be your knight in shining armor. You've got to be that knight.
Yeah.
And,
I was going to say, I like that image of the baseline, and I wonder if we can explore that a little bit, because as you're saying, like, everything in life has a starting point. And if that starting point is already cluttered, is already messy, is already out of shape or whatever it might be, then you can only go so far. You can only perform to a certain level. I think about it, like, even the kitchen thing is such a great example of, like, I know for us, if our kitchen's not clean, you know, if it's not cleaned after breakfast, if we haven't picked up all the food our toddler's thrown on the floor, we're not in a position then when it comes to dinner time, when we've come home from work, that we're going to want to prep and cook a nutritious meal. It's like, oh, the place is already a mess. Let's just get takeout. Like,
yeah, isn't it funny how quickly it affects your psyche?
Yeah. And I guess where I want to go with this is sort of towards that direction of well-being. And you know, in your work, you've done a lot of work in this space, but like, you know, I think most dads want to be there for the long haul with their kids. Like, I don't think any dad wants to miss their kid's wedding or their kid's, you know, graduation, whatever it might be. They don't want to miss those moments. So what's the baseline then? What do you have to have in place from a physical, from a mental, from an emotional viewpoint to ensure that you can be there for the long haul? What's that baseline got to be? So I want to throw this to you, Steve, because you've worked in this space such a long time and you know, it's what, you know, most people would know you for. So I wonder if we could start with the physical, like in terms of training for a dad who, you know, they've just had a kid, they've got the dad bod happening. They're not sleeping, kids taking up all their time. Like, how does a dad get back on top of that training, of their fitness? Like, what's sort of the basic movement that a man needs to be doing?
Yeah, it's the grind. Yeah, you start realizing that, especially when there's sleep deprivation and all of those things, and there's a lot of responsibilities that need to be upheld. It's you quickly kind of put your own well-being to the side. And it's not that any one thing is being forgotten or how do I say this? It's a culmination of a whole lot at one time. And that's the physicality side of things. That's the nutrition side of things or your diet as such and the things that you eat or don't eat or, you know, and even when it comes to fluids to maintain a baseline and to kind of counter or offset sleep deprivation and the grind.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that tips into is back to the physiology, but also the psychology of your mental well-being. And all those things can be affected very quickly. So in the physical sense, and I spoke about it earlier, was output and complexity. And we think that, you know, anything worth having is found in output. It's very much a Western mindset that we've got to toil, otherwise it's not worth having. And that's not true. Do some yoga, do some Pilates, go for a walk. You know, I said it before, complexity is the enemy of execution. What are some simple steps? What are some things that you, like a pill, yeah? What does it take to swallow the pill? And the easier you can make that, the more likely you are to engage with it. And that's where you got to take your thinking and your willingness to engage. And if all you can stomach, you know, I guess in the sense of psychologically, even physically, like cause you're just feeling beat up, is going for a walk, go for a walk. Because that beats sitting in front of the TV thinking about it and watching another half an hour. Because we do it, because we're feeling empty and we're physically drained, mentally drained, we'll escape our reality because the now's not enough, because we're just spent. Does it make sense?
Yeah.
And then and the more you engage, you do that 3 times a week, it'll become 4, it'll become 5. Next thing is, you know, you can easily go for a half an hour walk and then start turning that into a bit of a run. Or if you and most people do, they really struggle to do things on their own. You've got to engage with a trainer, or what I've found, and I've got a gym, is group fitness, because you become more accountable to a group and the like, and especially if you like rolling with them, it'll help you tenfold.
Yeah.
Because you won't want to put aside that half an hour or hour, but you're thinking Joe Bloggs is going to be there, this and that. You know, especially if you give a verbal commitment or a commitment via text, boom, guess where your backside is, buddy. and you'll do it. And how I run the show within my gym is no expectations. You know, if you're, I'd rather you be there than not. And if you can't stomach the workout of the day, I'll give you something different, or we'll just alter it. We'll modify it. And if you can consistently do the small things a number of times a week, well, they're wins on the board, yeah, compared to thinking about it or reading the motivational quote and reposting it, thinking, oh, yeah, I did something good for myself today. Like, how many people do it?
Yeah.
You know, like we talk a big talk and we talk about tomorrow and this and that. Nah, draw the line.
Yeah.
Like, let's go now. And that's in the physical sense, you know, and, you know, the yoga, when I say that, you know, some flow type exercises, you know, very much the calisthenic body weight, because what you do is the body's like a pump, you know, the muscles, you know, and the musculoskeletal system and the like, and you're getting that blood and that oxygen around the body, and it just releases those endorphins, those mm-hmm. feel good hormones.
Mm-hmm.
So think of it this way, that feelings are the language of the body.
Yeah.
And thoughts are the language of the mind, right? The mind is always scanning the body to kind of get a gauge on where it's at. Now, depending on how you're feeling, the mind is going to create thoughts to support those feelings.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're feeling Debbie Downer all the time, feeling, I'm saying, you are going to, if you can observe yourself, you will create thoughts and a reality to support that.
Yeah.
So if you can shift how you feel through doing some physical activity, you know, doing engaging and doing some interactions even with others that uplift you, you are then going to have thought processes that support that. The more often that you do that, you will see that needle shift like on a compass. You're walking true north. I don't want to be walking true north. I want to be walking east. Well, how do you shift it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that requires action. And that can be done gently.
I like that distinction that we're drawing there of feelings are the language of the body and thoughts are the language of the mind, because I think in our modern approach to mental illness, it does become a very mind-centered approach of treat the mind, you know, it goes therapy, meds, you know, it's all like in the head thing. And, you know, those things have their place, but we've become disconnected from the body. And I think that if we can't reconnect with the body, not only does that impact our own health, but we know that when dads rough and tumble play with their kids, which is such a body connection sort of thing with your kids, that has massive developmental outcomes for our kids. So, like, connecting back in with the body, even if it is just the walk or the yoga, whatever it might be, it's going to have so many more flow-on effects than just the immediate, oh, well, I've done the walk. Like, so I like that distinction. I like to think about it pragmatically of, as you say, like, don't complicate it. So if you know that you need to get some movement in, if you know that you need to give your partner a break, if you know that you need to spend one-to-one time with your kid, if you know that you need to connect in with other blokes, then go for a walk with other blokes. You're getting that connection time with your kid, your partner's getting a break, you're getting the movement, you know. So as you say, like, it's the less complicated it is, the more able you're to execute on it. So
the more willing, the lower the hurdle. But again, sometimes it's like it's too good to be true, or or it's, we have this idea. It's an idea, and you know, I've trained in the gym for a long time, and I remember catching myself out with, I wouldn't train if I didn't feel I was at my A game.
Yeah,
you know, like, oh, I'm not going to be able to go into the gym today and bench what I normally can bench, or deadlift what I can deadlift. And, oh, I'm not, I just won't go. I'll save myself. I'll save myself. You know, I'll save it. What a load of nonsense. You know what I mean? Like, it's, you know, and, or if you're really feeling spent, you, you do something that's a little more gentle and flowy. And man, there is so many apps and things out there nowadays that you could get on YouTube for free and just plug in yoga or something, and you'll be surprised. You'll do a few downward dogs and a few cobras and, you know, lunge with some rotation or cat cows. And I'm like, oh, wow, you've connected with your breath. You've connected with your body. You know, you've done some awareness work in that sense of uniting mind and body.
Mm.
And 5-10 minutes later, you're like, man, I feel like $1 million.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, or if you really want to be in the present moment, get an ice bath.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, yeah, like that. Those things work, you know, and you're seeing more and more research around that stuff. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say do it post-workouts or the like. You know, it's something good to do at the start of the day, or if you're feeling like you need to invigorate yourself or pull yourself into the present moment, because nothing will get you into the present moment like your breath being taken away because you're cold as hell. But yeah, they're very simple, and they're truths as such. Like, they're undeniable. It doesn't matter what anyone else says. Like, it's you. It's your physical being and your mental being, and you know, in the essence of everything else that goes hand in hand with that, it's how you engage with things and what you feel. You derive benefit from, or you feel like it's nourishing you in some way, like it's invigorating you, like it's helping you to be alive. Like, we're scared to feel.
Yeah,
we're scared to have a relationship with ourselves. And again, these things are taught. Like, it's and to feel discomfort and to feel pain and suffering and fear and all of those things is to feel. To feel is to be alive.
Yeah, yeah.
But observing or being aware of the differences in how you feel is important, because when you have that distinction, you can then also have crappy aspects, you know, of things that are going on, say it's in work, but it doesn't need to whitewash everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And how many of us end up in a bad mood?
Yeah.
And it taints everything.
That's it. Yeah.
And it doesn't have to. All right, I can compartmentalize or segment that, and that can be left alone for right now. Like, that doesn't need, and the emotion that's coming up for me right now isn't the emotion that I need to have this interaction to resolve this issue. Actually, what I need right now is to be calm, is to be considerate, and to put some space. And I might not even need to respond or react. I can just observe. Mm-hmm. And when you find yourself in that place, you're more logical. You'll more than likely come up with a solution a lot faster, or it just is nonsense anyway, and it just doesn't need any attention.
Yeah.
So therefore, you can serve that energy, and you have it there to utilize for something more important, or for something that you love and enjoy. And that's something else I've learned with age too, because I've realized, you know, my recovery isn't what it used to be. And the like, and well, this is what I enjoy doing, and these are the things that I don't particularly like doing. And so you balance out how you invest that energy, like you would, you know, your financial well-being.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we all love, you know, like, mate, we'd all love to have millions of dollars in our account and have that financial well-being so that it supports all of those other things. And the effort and degree that we go to making sure that that's well, but allowing this to suffer. And then when we have this and we look back at this and we're like, hang on a second, it doesn't matter how much of this that I've got, it's not going to fix where I'm at now. And that's unfortunate. Yeah. And yet there's enough information and knowledge and people willing to help and to guide, but people still don't engage.
Sure.
Like, we all know the detrimental effects of you know, highly processed foods and, you know, alcohol and you know, cigarettes or all those other types of things. Yet, you know, we still engage with those things and why? You know, because it's coping mechanisms, it's behavior, it's or some people they just thoroughly enjoy it, and so be it. Because at the end of the day, it's your choice. But if you want different, you've got to choose different.
Yeah. Yeah,
definitely. And be willing to stand by that.
For sure. As we're talking about wellness and, you know, that physical, emotional, mental well-being, how do we encourage our kids to prioritize that or to value that? Like, how do we? And I'm really interested to hear how you've done that with your kids, particularly with your background.
It's action.
Yeah.
You got to live and breathe it.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to show through your action, your behaviors, your choices and the like, what you prioritize, because your children will prioritize what you prioritize. Mm. And then as they get older and they have interactions further outside of the family nucleus, that will shift and change. But guess where most of us come back to?
Family.
No. Well, as we get older,
yeah,
we come back to the things that were most, that were the foundation of, yeah, of our upbringing. Like, look, yeah, they're showing it now with mental health and the like. Mm-hmm. A lot of trauma and the like in those early, mm-hmm, in early childhood and the like, you know, can have quite a negative effect, yeah, you know, on the projections moving forward. So the stronger those interactions with health and well-being and looking after yourself and prioritizing, you know, the things that you value most in life, for yourself, for your family, you know, the ones, I guess, that are flying top cover as such, the children will do the same.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you can talk until you're blue in the face about it and it will fall on deaf ears. You've got to live it. It's as simple as that. Yeah. Honest to God. Like, you know, I hear it even nowadays. You know, and I'm in a blended family.
Yeah.
And you hear, oh, but Dad chose to get drunk last night. That's why he can't take me to soccer today, because he's hungover. Kids see that.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, Dad wasn't at soccer because he drank last night.
Yep.
You know, and when you hear those things, a lot of people can't, that mirror, that reflection coming back at them is too much.
Mm.
It's a simple truth, man. Like, you know, but it's your willingness to accept back to, you know, and let it go. All right, I'm going to make a conscious choice to do things differently. And your ability to do that and uphold that, that's the hardest thing ever, but that's where the work, yeah, that's it's worth it in that space.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
And I'm fortunate, I did a lot of this type of stuff when I was young. My dad, you know, my mum and my dad, God bless them, they didn't drink. There was never alcohol in the house. And I'm only kind of touching on it because, yeah, it's quite prevalent in our society.
Yeah.
And you see it a lot because I get people presenting all the time with, oh, I need to get fit, I need to do this, I need to change my diet. And they're like, do you drink? Yeah, this and that. And they justify it away.
Yeah.
No amount of alcohol is healthy.
No.
They've shown that time and time again. And it's the same as smoking and all those other types of things. You know, if we tip into the breathing side of things, majority of people live in a sympathetic state, mm-hmm, with their breathing. So they're breathing on average 12 to 18 times per minute. So if you broke a minute down into six parts, so there's six 10-second lots, if you could work an in-breath to, say, 4 seconds and an out-breath to 6 seconds, there's 10 seconds. You can halve your breathing rate just by the awareness of a four count in and a six count out, which will switch you into more of a parasympathetic. It'll engage the vagus nerve and it'll relax your heart rate, breathing rate, and the profound effects, you know, in a physiological, psychological sense is astounding. And that's just through awareness and your breathing. You don't even need to go anywhere or do anything other than sit and be aware of breathing. And everyone who says, oh, I can't meditate, I can't do this, I can't do that, you can breathe. You're a human being. Yes, you can. But see, again, the Western mind, we have to have something to resist, to push against. No, you don't. Just let things go. Just observe. Don't have a cup of tea with it. There's a great Zen Buddhist master who said it. Yeah, Shunryu Suzuki. And I love all that the Buddhist type stuff, and I like that kind of investigative mentality and way of approaching things. And I've done a lot of reading, but also taking a lot of those readings and putting them into practice. And it's for me and my life and my kids and my interactions and how I used to father to how I now father, and just watching them grow up and blossom is, it's like I can't ask for anything more. Like, the moment's perfect. And anything else that comes our way is magnificent.
Oh, that is, I think, the perfect note to end on. I was going to ask about your family and where
it's... mate, we can... Yeah, but that, like, hey, they're great. Mate, I struggled as a kid. Yeah. I didn't pass school at all. There was probably one subject I passed, and that was shop A.
Yeah.
Shop A, woodwork.
Yeah.
Shop B. I can't even remember. And everything else I did poorly at. And because I just struggled, there was a lot of, I guess, trauma and how, you know, with the upbringing, and I struggled to express myself. I engaged with physical activity, you know, in my early childhood, but I really got into it at about 12 or 13 as I came into my teens, and I used physical activity to express myself, but also to just deal with how I was perceiving life, those discomforts, the uncertainty, the fear, the anger, like, you know, all of that stuff. And, you know, just, and being a young boy, the hormones, I struggled to talk with my mother, with my father and the like. So I would go out and run. They allowed me to go to the gym. I'd train. And what it did was shift the feelings momentarily in me, which put me at ease, and it wore me out. And with time, the difference with exercise, say to drugs and alcohol, is exercise always has a big question mark. It's always asking something of you. It's like, do you have it today?
Mm-hmm.
You know, are you ready? You know, have you got what it takes? You know, the other stuff, it helps you to escape.
Yeah.
And I continued my exercise through the military career on top of everything that they threw at us. I still did my own training. So when I chose to leave, it was a no-brainer. It had been such a near and dear friend to me. And as I learned more and engaged, interacted in the world outside of the military, you know, with in the television space and The Biggest Loser, where people had felt their lives had utterly fallen apart.
Mm.
And my job as a trainer was to help them gain some semblance of who they were in the present moment, forgive themselves for the past, draw the line, and let's focus on what we can do now to improve the future. And that's what I did every day. And yeah, I might have, like, you know, on the TV screens being a bit of a hard ass in that sense, but that's what they wanted. But behind the scenes, I was just this bloke that gave a damn. And I wanted to see the best for them, and I had to build a rapport with them. I had to have them believe in them, you know, in me as the trainer, in themselves collectively as a team. And so when I wasn't there, they were willing to do what was necessary. You know, in The Biggest Loser days, it was be above the yellow line. And the more that they could do that, and they saw other people dwindle and fall away, they realized it comes down to the work ethic. It comes down to, you know, I can say that I've done all this and all of that, and I stand on the scales and it's not reflected. And yeah, it's like that thing up on the wall behind me and everything like that. Like, yes, that's wonderful, and I did that stuff in the past, but that was through doing those things. That was living that life, making those choices, and you're doing. I didn't have to do it for anybody else other than myself, and that's probably, you know, one of the big things for, you know, the listeners, is you've got to engage with things that speak to you. And sometimes they don't carry any significance or meaning at the start. And it's until you go into it, You know, think of the things that you love and you enjoy, and you'll go to great lengths and to and push yourself well beyond. But there's other things in life you may be a little apprehensive around, like your physical well-being, or, you know, eating a bit better, or, you know, not seeking excitement because the now is not good enough. And those that excitement's only fleeting moments. I think of my Survivor, being on Survivor with that, and just doing the work. And you'll be surprised. You'll shift in your thinking, in your energy, and that outward effect of things. Things will shift in that space as well. And that's what I've noticed. Like, I've got, you know, I know loads of people, but people that I'm close to in life as such, you know, it's only a handful. And it's interesting how people come and go because of your willingness to do or not to do. And when you no longer choose to play in a space of nonsense, how quickly people aren't there. Because people aren't going to do it for you.
Yeah.
They're struggling to do it for themselves.
You know, Steve, we started this interview talking about, you know, the things that we learnt about family and parenting and fatherhood from our families. What's your hope for your kids if and when they start their own families? What do you hope they would take from you as a dad and implement into how they parent?
Yeah, that takes life too seriously. Have fun. Do the things that you enjoy, not just to fit in with others because you think you need to. And be mindful of the things that you shackle yourself to. Because the more responsibilities, the more things you're tied down to. And the less agile you are. Because if you choose to move to Broome tomorrow, you won't be able to. And, you know, when you're agile and you can shift tact or direction and make some decisions that you feel could improve your life or enhance, not, you know, just improve, and you have that ability, it's amazing. You're like, you know, you realize just how infinite everything is and those experiences and those interactions that you can have. But when you really bog yourself down, and I've done it, and I think through doing it, though, for me, it enables me through, you know, means like this to share those experiences and that wisdom and knowledge for those to make more informed decisions and choices earlier on. And that's my kids, and that's for anyone else, you know, that could be a young dad. I see that in the space with physical activity and what it is that, you know, I do now. And all those younger years, training and exercising, the military, the Biggest Loser, my engagement with CrossFit, learning, doing courses, implementation, I can help fast track people. I can teach them things in a few weeks or months that took me years, and at an earlier age, so they're learning with a younger nervous system, they're learning from a blank canvas, and they're interacting and engaging with things that you derive a little more benefit and benefit from as such, rather than getting caught up in the nonsense. But we all will reflect and think there's moments in time and the like that that was just silly. Oh, I shouldn't have done that. I should have done this. Like, there's always going to be those thoughts, but it's how you handle that too. And you're drawing the line on it. You're letting it go. Yes, there may be a bit of a scar from it. You know, it's cut deep. So be it. It kind of shapes us, our character, and who we are, and helps us to take those steps in a better direction. But you see it. Yes, honestly, you see it. Like, in the level of consciousness, like where our kids are at. I remember having a conversation with I was 40, and my daughter was like 8 at the time. And I was like, I was just blown away. I was like, babe, you're 8 years old and understanding things that took Dad 40 years to figure out. And like, look at the years difference in that. So her choices and interactions in life from that age moving forward, what will, in my eyes, because of my experiences, they seem more sound, if that makes sense, because the consciousness is aware.
And I feel in what you're saying right now, that's really what legacy is about. It's not just about, how people are going to remember you or how your memory lives on, but how has the way you've lived imparted something on others and made their life and their future better? And
better, more beautiful, like enriched, and like the willingness, how do I say, helping others who are willing to help themselves.
Yeah.
And that's what it's about. Like, it's, man, because it's so vast and varied, the experiences that we can have. But, we as humans, and the technology that we have, and it's always advancing. And, every day could be a holiday. it doesn't need to be so doom and gloom and so serious. You see it in the media and just even in their interactions, catch yourself doing it next time. Like, how quickly you get caught in those conversations about, this and that and blah, blah, blah. You got to be careful, because that stuff has residue.
Yeah.
And it lingers and it lingers. And is that truly how you think or you feel? Or are you just adopting a way of being because that's the space or the lens that everyone else sees it through? That's why, again, television and stuff, like even stories that, or movies or a lot of these series nowadays, there's a lot of drama. And yes, it engages people, but why is it engaging you? Is it helping, because it's pulling you out of the drama that you feel is your life and where you're living right now, just to escape for a little bit of time? But those words and those, it has weight. Like, it affects your psyche and your decision making and your choices. You're like, that's why, I feel it's so important to have these conversations, with someone like yourself, and for those willing to listen and to pull themselves up and just contemplate it for a moment in time and go, hang on a second, maybe I do take things a little bit seriously. Maybe I do spend a little bit too much time doing this when I could utilizing that time to do that. And maybe I need to let go a little bit more. Maybe I am getting caught up in, if only life wasn't like this for me when I was growing up, if it was like this, I'd be in a much better place. Stop it. Yank on the reins, pull yourself up, make some conscious decisions, write it down, keep a diary, and go about right now in this present moment, what can you do differently? And you'll have a rush, your mind, because you'll be challenging your comfort zone. So you will induce fear, and fear will create complexities. What about this? What about that? Like anxieties. Mm-hmm. It's like, hang on a second. What's that? How do I take that first step to life being more beautiful or not taking it so seriously, and do that, and you'd be like, actually, that wasn't so bad. Let's take another step. And then life unfolds. It opens up.
Steve, what I appreciate about this conversation is you've laid out a philosophy, a blueprint of And let's use that word beautiful, of beautiful fatherhood, of that presence in the moment, of the relationships, of the joy of the present, of that interaction being it and not the output of it. And that gem of complexity, complexity is blocking execution. I think our dad's listening to this. You know, we set out to talk about fatherhood and I had questions about your family and we sort of dug straight to that level. And I think that potentially is more helpful anyway, because what we're getting at right now is break open how you operate. Really have a think about how you operate and how you are in this world. And if there's stuff there you don't like, it doesn't have to be that way, that you can switch that stuff. You can simplify it. You don't have to get caught up in the drama. Steve, I don't want to take up too much more of your time. So thank you for joining us. If the listeners do want to follow you and hear more of this messaging, what's the best way for them to find you?
Well, Commander Steve, Instagram, Facebook, there's the Get Commando Fit. Oh, we've got Commander Steve's website, which, you know, can kind of point you in different directions. And I'm going to be looking at bringing out a Get Commando Fit app again. So in the training space.
Yeah.
And the like. So we've got the gym. And, you know, that's that really only speaks to, you know, the people that live in the vicinity as such, but being able to take that training that we do on a daily basis and kind of expand it out, you know, into, you know, a different town, a different city, a different state, you know, around the world, you know, for those that kind of like the commando way as such. Yeah, that'll be on offer hopefully in the new year.
Awesome. Well, Steve, thank you so much for your time, mate. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Adam.
Awesome. And we also want to thank our listener for tuning in today. If you haven't already, go check out our website at www.dadsgroup.org. In this space, we've got some awesome resources for support for families, new and expecting families. There's a lot of mental health support there by some amazing organizations. On this website as well, you can also support Dad's Group through purchasing our merchandise, or a solid donation would be amazing and help us impact the lives and of new and expecting families all around Australia. But thank you guys so much for tuning in, and we'll catch you next week. Cheers, guys.